Hey Veeam Community Podcast listeners, it's on. VeeamON 2015 has been announced and will be returning to Las Vegas. VeeamON 2015 will be held October 26th through the 29th at the Aria Resort Hotel and Casino. Like last year, the Veeam CE course will be offered at a discount, but this year it will be held before the event. VeeamON is the event dedicated to data center availability, and this year's event will be even bigger and better than before. You don't want to miss it. Want to find out more? Check out go.veeam.com/veeamon and pre-register. That way you'll be the first to know when early bird pricing is available and stay up to date on all the latest for VeeamON 2015. Also be sure to like the VeeamON Facebook page. We'll see you in Vegas.
Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 104, Gadgets and Their Journey to the Enterprise. Here we go. Back with me again is my rock, my go-to all the time, always have an opinion, Mr. Jason Perlow. How you doing, sir?
Rickatron, what is up, my friend? How is the Arctic cold doing in your neck of the woods?
Oh, the guy who moves to Florida from New York City asks the question. Yes. The polar vortex did indeed make a casual appearance here in central Ohio this weekend. We hit around -11 Fahrenheit for my Celsius friends. I think that's going to be around 25 below. It was cold, Perlow, I'll tell you what. But now we're only around -8 Celsius, +12, +14 Fahrenheit right now.
Yeah, today's weather was about 83 degrees high with a low of 67 in Florida. I'm looking at 74 degrees, nice and clear in the Fort Lauderdale area right now.
But I mean, in a situation like that, Jason, you'd have to wear shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we and Jason and I, guys, have been trying to get this podcast going for a few days, and unforgivably, unfortunately to myself, I said, hey, Jason, let's record on Monday the 12th at 9 p.m., and those of you who are college football fans know that there was a game last night, and my city kind of inverted itself because of that game. So a great college football game between Ohio State and Oregon last night. So here we are. Let's talk about gadgets, Perlow. So before we get started on, you know, gadgets in their journey to the enterprise, I know you have a lot of opinions on this. You want to check them all out. What's your current state of the union with gadgets right now?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, I think we've gone to a phase, you know, where the smartphones, the tablets, the IoT devices have all sort of, they've become a bit more mature in the consumer space, right? And I think those are what really got, you know, center stage at the CES this year. You know, I think we've got to the point where we're all pretty sure that any smartphone you buy on the market right now is going to be a pretty good one. So the tablets, there isn't a lot of distinction between, at least on the Android side, in terms of feature set on a lot of them. I mean, you get some spec creep, you know, on the processor, on the RAM. You know, of course, with the iDevices, you know, they're all at a far more than acceptable level of consumer, you know, performance right now. And I would say, in fact, most of the consumer applications that run on these devices right now are don't even close to being able to exploit the full capability of the hardware. And we're just starting to see enterprise-capable gadgets, as you would say. You know, the Surface Pro 3 is a real enterprise-level tablet, you know, designed from the ground up for enterprise workloads and vertical market workloads. As you know, a lot of the airlines are using them, as are the NFL teams, if you see them. I think we've gotten to a point where there's a level of maturity in the consumer stuff. I think what's happening is, what is it going to take to get these things into the hands of, you know, corporations for, and what are the actual use cases, right? And I mean, we looked at wearables, right? Right now, It's all about the sports and fitness tracker type stuff. I mean, there's a million of those things out right now. They're the iWatch has not even come out yet. That's due, early within the next couple of months. And it's hard to say whether or not that will have any actual enterprise aspirations at all. The iPad, however, may very well come out with an enterprise, quote unquote, professional version. So that it'll be able to be more suitable for things that you might find in an enterprise or vertical workload, such as, true digitization, higher cap, applications that can use larger amounts of RAM, things like that. So we're starting to see use cases on the fringe for those kind of things, but most of that I see is in vertical for those types of devices. And of course, security
Yeah.
is a big concern with these things, right?
Oh, security. Oh, we gotta have fun.
Security
This
and
is gadgets.
management.
You're ruining it.
Yep.
So let's you hit on a lot of things here, Jason. Let's talk about spec creep. And I personally have observed spec creep, especially in the server platform. I remember in 2009 we saw a new big player come onto the converged server market, or
Yeah.
actually pioneering converged and tackling a pretty low margin market. But spec creep is, in my opinion, this is the phrase that I like to use. It's a short-term milestone. Okay, I'm number one for now, but come back tomorrow and that might not be the case. And you also talked about the Surface Pro 3 in particular. The Surface folks, this tablet, this device, this thing is for real. Myself, I use the Surface RT1, don't laugh, the very first one, and it is really everything I need for my mobile endpoint. Everything I do for me is in a data center, and for my job, that works for me. And it's honestly a pretty light device in the sense of in my investment. If it's stolen, broken, lost, it's not a tragedy, right? And I protect my data elsewhere. Use a lot of cloud apps, internal, personal, company, etc. All good. And the NFL, for example, it's kind of funny. I think they're using Surface Pro 3s
Yep.
for the picture play analysis, which I was reading a lot about that. Very interesting season with this, right? They built a specialized app, and if those of us who are football fans at home watching a professional football game, we actually have a lot more information than they do on the field, because the communications that they have are limited to radio conversations to coaching staff, and now photographs, only photographs, not video, from aerial shots of the plays. So basically every play, the start of the play, is a still image that they analyze, but they don't get replay down on the field. They, at halftime, they don't get to watch, a couple plays on the TV. You'd be surprised how limited the information they have. There's no phones, all of that. And
No.
that's basically in the interest of fair competition. But bringing it home, the tablet, the mobile device that is more than a phone, right? And that's a broad category of things here. You talked about their increased RAM. I actually would counter that to say that their increased processor as well, their capabilities,
Yeah.
they can actually render things. They can do the hard work. You don't have to. Clouds are good, don't get me wrong. Data centers are good. But these new devices, they have the legs to actually do a lot of their work on their own.
Yeah, I think what you're going to end up seeing is an interesting hybrid situation where you're going to have a certain amount of processing takes place in the cloud. The large the data analytics piece, but maybe visualization type stuff takes place on the endpoint device. Or there's some combination of that. There are ways of virtualizing GPUs in the cloud and streaming pre-rendered stuff. So that the endpoint device doesn't have to work as hard. So we're going to be seeing some really interesting stuff like that. Now, I think that's obviously got a lot of potential for games and entertainment, right? But where that we're going to see stuff like that in the enterprise being used might end up in some kind of a rather odd places, right? I mean, like I most of that I think we're going to see in medical. And in aerospace, right? Because those are where you start seeing a lot of image processing, like radiography, for example, or MRI, where like perhaps a remote doctor might want to see some test results, or someone who needs to be consulted from, 3,000 miles away, rather than in the primary care hospital where the actual radiography takes place. He might want to be able to see, a full 3D, model of an MRI or a CAT or whatever it may be of the patient. Right now, back in the old, and years ago, that this was just not possible. I mean, the doctor had to be physically present in order to do some type of a diagnosis. You couldn't do a remote diagnosis like this. But now we're looking into the very fair possibility that there might be remote diagnoses capable using cloud-based, data storage from radiography centers and things like that in labs. So that
Oh,
would.
I absolutely believe that is, take that one step further and like robotic nurses or whatever, you could really, really go
Possibly.
deep on that, treating a massive infection situation where, other humans might not be a good idea. I mean, medical, excellent use case, aviation, quick service, parts operations. I mean, that might also be an in for wearable tech, right? How many times in furlough, I know you do a bit of travel, have you been stuck trying to fly somewhere? And of course, it's when you're going home, right? You're waiting for they need the right type of technician to perform this procedure to fix something relatively small on an aircraft. I've been in that situation, and I remember
And
we
you're on the
flew
ground for
in a
2 hours waiting for a part to get
part,
delivered or something like that, some stupid
a
thing.
part and a qualified person, and it's just so frustrating. If we can use wearable tech on something like that, first of all, in that example, the airlines would save money. Second of all, the availability, the uptime of their service, flying people would go up. Everybody wants that, and passengers are happy. That'll be happy too. So, I think there's good opportunity, but we take a look at when it comes to gadgets, right? And we're coming off the big event, Computer Electronics Show, CES. Is that what it's called? CES
Consumer
Symposium
Electronics
or what?
Show, yeah. And actually, I mean, this year has been the highest attendance ever, 170,000 people. Now, what's really interesting is I kind of predict that this show will probably not exist within 10 years. And the reason for that is kind of interesting, is because the Consumer Electronics Show is kind of a misnomer. I mean, consumer electronics is showcased at that show, but this was never a show for consumers. It's an invite-only event, and most of the people who attend the CES are volume buyers for large retail stores. So the Best Buys of the world, the Costcos, but also the Amazons and those things. Now, the thing is that if you take a look, I mean, just in the last week or so, there's been a lot of news about large retail store chains closing lots of locations. So we're getting to the point where there's going to be less and less brick and mortar capable stores of selling this type of item, right? And we're going to be down to the either the really few big box stores that are left and online for some of these things. I mean, the Amazons of the world, what have you. So I think the CES is going to be less and less important because the big box stores and the online retailers are going to have their own agendas for what they want to sell to their customers. I mean, for example, even if you take a look at the SKUs that you might find at a big box, at like a discount club, like a Costco or a BJ's, right? Those SKUs are specifically made for those discount clubs. You will not find those SKUs in retail. I mean, you'll notice. So I think that over time, a specialized show like that is gonna be less important. I mean, look what happened to Comdex and PC Expo. It's the same situation, right? So I think that the fact that we have so much e-tailing going on and consolidation in retail. I mean, look at how much empty retail space we have. All these dead malls. There's been articles in major newspapers the last few weeks about the whole dead mall syndrome. You know, it's like something like out of a Mad Max or a post-apocalyptic sci-fi movie. But in any case, from an enterprise perspective, we have to think about very differently about what we think about these devices. And consumers don't have to think about, I mean, I'm sure consumers are concerned about security, but not to the extent that a large enterprise is concerned about something like mobile device management, making sure that documents and information do not leave the context of the enterprise user, right? That may have, you know, consultants on board, that may have sensitive documents that only need to be distributed to a certain number of people, you know, rights management, all kinds of things. And those are things that consumers typically don't think about, right? And then, of course, you know, there's the issue of the IoT stuff. Now, at home, we have, you know, the Nests. We have, you know, these Amazon, what we call them, the Echo. I just bought one of those things today for $99. You know, well, you got the Sonoses and all these things, right? Right now, there's really no standard for which those things talk to each other. Now, the Linux Foundation, of course, is trying to figure out, you know, how to do that by coming up with a consortium so that these things can talk to each other in sort of a common language, just like internet devices can talk to each other via TCP/IP. Well, there's going to be a higher level language or lingua franca for these IoT, Internet of Thing devices to be able to talk to each other so they can actually interoperate. Because right now, I mean, the idea of, like, for example, like an Apple made device interoperating with like a Google made device, right? Or rather, a Google made device interoperating with a Microsoft made device is kind of is semi-ludicrous, because it's you're seeing these sort of fiefdoms of these ecosystems exist, where all those companies' devices can talk to each other, but not necessarily of another vendor. So we're getting back to the whole platform interoperability pains we dealt with in the 1980s and 1990s all over again, but in
Well, it
miniature.
feels a lot like, it feels a lot like mobile device management for all these new categories. Imagine smart building technologies where you have heterogeneous, you know, heat controllers, security systems,
Sure.
access control, and you've got to roll that up. I mean, these are real situations, and you hit on something earlier when you talk about, you know, CES being very much a supply chain, you know, forum of sorts. And, you know, I have a lot of experience in the supply chain, and I loved working in that space. Tough work, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it's very tough work,
But,
but it's
you
cool. You really learn how the sausage is made, though.
know, oh, indeed. And what they can do today with order fulfillment, automation, for the space, for the investment, for the time to inventory that these retailers have to hold these goods, it absolutely is very profitable. So I totally agree that you're going to see a total flip of, you know, 10 years ago, 1% of electronics spend was online, 99 was in box, whatever, you know, some sort of made up that statistic, right? But flip that into a couple years, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 100% the other direction.
Well, take a look at a company like Apple. I mean, what percentage do you think of Apple's iPhone sales are direct on their website? I mean, and from a supply chain perspective, I mean, I bought my iPhone 6 Plus from Apple's website when it was announced. Took me long time to get it because of the model was I bought the 128 gigabyte version, which is, you know, the big daddy of them, and that was the one that was in most demand. But I mean, that was all freight on board Shenzhen, China. You know, there was no inventory, you know, at a local depot at an Apple store. It was shipped directly to my house from Apple. You know, so
Well,
it's.
and that's an ultimate efficiency, right? When you have an explosive quantity of orders, that's really the only way to do that. And you know, a lot of times you hear things of wholesale and retail. That's removing both of those levels, right? It's going right from supplier and then no distribution beyond that. So distribution can be efficient, but as you talk about, you know, millions of devices, it's almost more efficient to do it that way. So I think we'll see, you know, these efficiencies continue. I mean, this is just, we all want everything, we want it now, but the enterprise always needs to stop and think about things a little bit. And we're going to see new things. In fact, the TVs part, right? CES,
Yeah.
the newest TVs is a big thing there, which I need a new TV. If anybody wants to send me one, I'll take it.
But here, see,
But
here, but the whole 4K thing is kind of a red herring, though. I mean, it's a 4K. I actually see being used in the enterprise quicker than it gets used in consumer. And the reason for this is, if you want to do high grade visualizations and things like that, that's great for something that's rendered on a computer, right? But think of the problem of having to transfer 4K movies over the internet to a over broadband to a to someone's household where they got a 20 megabit, Comcast connection. That just ain't gonna fly. I mean, you're talking about movies, even compressed will be, tens of gigabytes of data, or more,
Yeah.
So
Right.
I mean, what are you gonna do? Like order your movie the night before, and while you're sleeping, maybe sometime in the next day it gets delivered to your local hard drive, during downtime.
Like
I mean.
it's like the new Netflix that like the old Netflix, wait for the DVD from San Jose. But the weird part here is, I was in a situation once where we remodeled a conference room. An enterprise business type of scenario. And I go to a lot of different companies and offices, so I see a lot of different conference rooms. You know what I'm seeing more and more, Perlo? I'm seeing people use TVs instead of quote unquote monitors as presentation techniques
Yep.
in these situations. You know what that means? VGA and the like are harder to find. So,
Much harder to find,
I'm
huh?
finding myself, yeah, I'm using HDMI, aka a TV
Display
technology.
port, the HDMI, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, almost exclusively. So, there's one area where you're seeing additional convergence, a blur, right? And companies have a, I think, a preference to have the latest and greatest, whatever looks best. And honestly, for the money, the TVs are going to look the best
Yeah, they are.
in small situations. Large scale, projection. I say light box, air over air onto a screen is still better. But for now, I think that's what we're seeing. So, all of that being said, the enterprise for devices has to, I think, really keep their benefits first, right? The rendering on the 4K TVs, good point. Putting time to market closer to where you need it. And I think the surfaces, the maybe the high-end iPad in the medical type and the maybe aviation type, that would work. But what do you think's next for the enterprise? Do they need to get rid of something? I almost think traditional phone systems are the thing that's going to go first.
Well, that's what I'm
I don't
talking
know.
to you on now. I'm using Link Enterprise Voice right now to talk to you, which is, I mean, I have a broadband connection in my house, a standard, Comcast broadband. I'm a mobile employee of the company that I work for, and you're dialed in on a it must be a cell phone or some type of a line.
Skype.
But this, yeah.
I'm on Skype.
Yeah, so you're Skyping me, and I'm Link EVing you. So we're VoIP to VoIP completely. So I mean, and that's how the enterprise is going to go. I mean, you're going to have people with their headsets attached to their PCs, or maybe even to their smartphones, right? And so they can
Yeah,
walk around and,
I never use my work phone on my desk. I talk to people a lot.
Yeah.
So this is just very interesting. I mean, phone systems, especially if you're talking about, I don't want to say obsolete, but when you're talking about hardware that in the back end, in the data center bit, that might involve connections to phone grids that have bizarre cards, proprietary hardware, those types of things aren't fun. Nobody says, "Oh, I love my phone system." People go in and say, "Oh, I love my servers and storage. I love my awesome applications, my fast bandwidth." Those are the things that people love. So, yeah, I don't know. I think if anything's going to go, there's too many options today, to do the core telecom differently. But, I got to raise this big asterisk. because you know, I used to work for a bank and we took calls, and there are
Printers and fax
rules on how.
machines. That's
Yeah,
hilarious.
so it's not going to disappear completely,
No.
but I wouldn't be surprised if. Oh, you know what? I take that back. I also, in my experience, and this was actually quite a few years ago, we had a technical support operation that was all VoIP, and it was all headset and soft phone. So, you know, if you invest in the technology, I think, you know, maybe those things are something that can go as well. That was all homegrown. Well, in the long or the short, homegrown through Siemens Communication, homegrown, which doesn't necessarily mean it's cheap, but it was advanced at the time. So,
Oh, but now you don't
you know, there's
even
a
need,
lot of
yeah, now you don't even need to invest in your own stuff. Now you just buy a, you
right.
know, an Office 365 Link subscription, right? And or rather, it's going to be Office 365 Skype for Business is what it's going to be called. But and then you pay your, you know, your subscription fees for how many hundreds of users you have, or dozen of users you have, and away you go. No more PBXs, right? And it
That's
integrates
right. It's
great with your
totally
con.
scalable up and down.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. So,
Interesting.
I mean, it's bringing that technology that the, you know, the Siemenses of the world and the big banks of the world who went and bought these big expensive VoIP PBX systems, you know, 10 years ago. Now your SMB or small office will have the same technology, you know, and they won't have to buy anything. So, other than a couple of Logitech headsets, basically.
Oh, you know what? I'm gonna plug it. I'm gonna plug it, Perlo. Microsoft LiveChat LX3000 headset is $19,
Really? I haven't tried it.
$18. Best one ever. And you know what's funny? I initially didn't believe it because it said designed for Skype, and I'm like, ah, come on. How can something be designed for Skype? You know? But it's a USB headset. It's tough. I keep one in my backpack. I keep one at my work desk, and I keep one here at home, connected to each of the different endpoint devices. Love this thing. My kid plays with it every night, and hopefully, I still sound pretty good. It's got a boom and a proper headset. I cannot hear noise beside me. I cannot, you know, people can't hear what's going on. I had, you know, my kid was screaming a little bit ago, and I don't even think you heard it. And the best part, Perlo, on the cable, it's not wireless, that's okay. But on the cable, there's this little, I guess you could call it a brick, but it's an inline circuit.
Yep.
Volume up, volume down.
Yep.
Most important, a hard mute button.
Oh,
So
you gotta
you
have
can,
those during conference calls.
yes.
Gotta
Yeah, and
have
it's, well, I
those.
shouldn't say hard, because it's not like a click. It's a
Right.
soft, but you can just hit it with your finger. You got a red light, and you know you're on mute. Anyways, got to plug the Microsoft LiveChat LX3000. That's my fave. And I've actually had, this is my third one, so I think I'm going on 3 or 4 years now. So I have to see if they have a new one, but definitely for the money cannot be beat.
Coolness.
Anyway, so Perlo, any final comments on gadgets and their
No, you
journey to
know,
the
actually,
enterprise?
I think, you know, what we're really going to see in the enterprise is and in vertical is drones. In fact, CNN just got, I think it was CNN, just got FAA approval to use drones for their reporting. So we may start seeing enterprises use drones for security, you know, for their office parks and things like that, you know, sooner than we thought we would, you know. So I don't know if we'll see Amazon dropping, you know, packages at our doorstep, but certainly for small confined areas that are privately owned, for local surveillance and security, I can't think of anything better, you know, for keeping people safe. So
Oh
I
yeah, I'm excited for drones. I've got plenty of drone stories of me fishing them out of trees, but
think about picking one up myself, actually.
they're going to improve in their controllability, their battery, their durability, their visibility. I mean, actually, even now the video you can get from these things are pretty tight. The communications, you know, the price will go down. Everything will be good. Indoors, outdoors, you know, wow. Yeah, you hit on something. Even the, you know, I could even go so far as to say the supply chain would like those. Now they use a lot of on-ground robots,
Sure.
like Amazon Order Fulfillment. But imagine
Oh man, did you see the
some.
inside of that at that video where they showed these robot like they look like filing cabinets that just kind of just fly around the inside of these Amazon facilities, and that's how that they do the packing for and
Right.
sorting for all the stuff. It's
They
crazy.
bring the product. Yeah, they bring the product to the order fulfillment person, and they stage out their next orders. So all that person needs to do is pick, 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 done. The next one shows up, pick, 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 done. The old way of doing order fulfillment, literally, these people were on the track team. They'd have to run up and down, and you have multiple people. This was a big problem. You had multiple people touching an order for it to be fulfilled. Now you have one person. So imagine the just
Someone
inherent
just stacks
QA.
these. Someone just stacks these robot
Yeah.
filing cabinets at each of the locations. Marks it. I guess barcodes it or something like that. Shoves it in the shelf, and then this robot comes flying across the floor to the person at the end on the shipping, who just sees the product, picks it out, scans it, and then it's off its way. So that
Oh, yeah, it's so
it's
brilliant.
cra it's crazy. It's insane.
The especially when you have orders that are very varietal. If you had a very uniform set of orders, it might not be the best way to do it, because honestly, you could maybe even just do a robot for it all. But, if you're ordering a special tomato sauce, a fancy battery, and a fancy
Linksys
pen, a shirt, a Linksys router,
router.
and it's just everything that you can get on Amazon. The only way to do it is to automate. And those videos are great examples, and I'll put a link to that in the podcast notes. But hey, Perlo, great talking to you again. Got to have you back more often. Thanks again for
Absolutely.
being on.
You got it, man.